Hello, everyone. Welcome, welcome today for our Persuasion, Influence, Negotiation, Motivation call. We are in October, and we are kind of doing a Laws of Persuasion series. Appreciate your feedback. And things we're going on is make sure that the fundamental of what you're learning at 12 Laws of Persuasion. Last couple of weeks, we've been focusing on the law of connectivity, your ability to connect with others. Today, I want to focus on the other law, a law of involvement. Now, both these laws are used more in the beginning of your persuasive presentation, and it's critical to your success and your ability to persuade. Now, with the law of involvement, your goal is get the prospect mentally engaged so they can listen to your message, they can pay attention to your message, you can get them to participate in the process and take ownership. If they're not listening, if they're not paying attention, if they don't care, you can't persuade them. So the law of involvement suggests the more you involve someone's five senses, involve them mentally and physically, create the right atmosphere for them, you can keep their attention. As a persuader, you need to help your audience to be one step closer to taking action, make it as easy as possible. When you get a prospect to start something, it is most likely that they're going to follow through and complete what you want them to do. They become involved. Small, easy steps. For example, if you put on your shoes to go to the store, you're more likely to continue in that direction. If you sit down and turn on the TV, your goal of going to the store remains more unlikely. So let's get into it. Let's talk about it. Then we'll open it up for questions. This is all about participation. Getting people involved, getting them to participate is critical to understanding this law. So psychologist Kurt Lewin did something really interesting. Hold on, I'm having technical difficulties here. All right. Here we go. We're back. Psychologist Kurt Lewin was hired by the government in World War II because they were running out of meat, like beef, chicken, and pork, and he was hired to persuade more Americans to eat intestinal meats. They are running out of meat, and most cultures, well, I won't say most, but many cultures will eat intestines or stomach, but Americans won't. Still has nutritional value. He's hired to convince people to do it. So he gets everybody in this big room, rah-rah session, do it for your country, here are the recipes, and only 3% of those people went home to cook intestinal meats for their family. I just lost again. Wait a minute here. I am having some good technical difficulties here. Hold on. Everything went blank in here. All right. Sorry about that. Technical difficulties. So we're talking about Kurt Lewin. Only 3% went home to cook intestinal meats for their family. That's dismal. So he tried something else. He got everybody involved in a room and said, look, here's the challenge. Here's the problem. Here's what's going on. How can we do it? How would you convince others to do this? And they talked about it, try this, why don't you do this, why don't you have this happen? And it was amazing. Instead of 3%, it was 32% went home to cook intestinal meats for their family. That's 10 times higher because they persuaded themselves. Remember, your goal as a great persuader is to help people persuade themselves. That is your goal. That is what you want. Get them to participate. Now, ways to do that? You can ask for their advice. That's an easy way to do it. You can tell them what to do. You know what they should do. But if you could ask for their advice, it's a much different scenario. Can you ask your neighbor, say, hey, can you help me build this fence? No. Can I get your advice? Can I show you how? What would you do in this situation? Works very, very well. Simple things like, oh, I need your help. Or what's your opinion? Might work out very, very well for you. Those are the type of things you can do to ask their advice to get them mentally involved. An easy thing to do, but most people don't do it. And that's what you need to think about when you're going through this process is don't tell them what to do. Help them persuade themselves. ask their opinions, ask their advice, and it goes a long way. Another thing you can do is to get them to visualize. They can see it, taste it, touch it, feel it. If they can't see it in their mind, if they can't see themselves doing it, it's not going to happen. So if you can get them to visualize them doing what you're asking them to do, it's much easier for you to persuade them. Because if you haven't created it mentally for them, it's not going to happen physically. For example, you were selling a home. Bring them in. Hey, where are you going to put the grand piano? And have the kids choose the rooms and meet the neighbors. And where are you going to put the play set? Visualize those increases the chances that they are going to do it. Another thing you can do is the old, probably heard it before, the old take this home and try it. A lot of times when you have a product or service, you can promise this and promise that, but hey, take it home, try it. Especially with the nutritional type product or product you're promising, all these things, hey, try it. That's more persuasive than actually trying to sit them down and show them all the benefits. For example, America Online, I don't know how many free CDs have gone through your fingers. Now, they used to be the biggest and best. Free CD, free 1,000 hours. Get involved, taste it, touch it, feel it. That's very persuasive. Maybe a test drive. So they don't charge money for a test drive. They want you to get you in there. They want you in the car. In fact, what a lot of high-end dealerships are doing now, so you bought a car 3-4 years ago, knock on your door. Hey, we want your opinion, we want your advice. Okay, remember, we're asking for advice. Here's the new model of what you're driving around. We want to know what you think and what you like and what you don't like. You're driving around a new car. Your neighbors are saying things. You're feeling it. It smells good. If it's rare, you're going to return it and go back to the old car because you're in the new car. You can understand what's called the puppy dog close in sales. This one's a fun one. You're at the mall, and there are puppies. Say you have a daughter. And they're like, no, you can't, no puppies, no, right? And the store owner sees your resistance, and they say something like, hey, just take it home for the weekend. If you don't like it, bring it back. And you know the rest is history. That's the same type of thing. So some people have products that just get people to taste it, touch it, feel it, try it, use it. It's much easier to persuade them because now they can see themselves doing it because they've already used it. Now, Post-it notes is an interesting one. Post-it notes were a complete failure because it was too unique. It was too different. Nobody knew what it was, and it failed. So they sent all the post-it notes back because there's really no way to describe it. I haven't needed it in the past. Why would I need it now? Is it a stapleless note? You know, it makes no sense. So they sent it to the secretaries of all the Fortune 500 companies, used it, liked it, trickled down, and the rest is history. So sometimes the easiest way to get people involved, put it in their hands. Give them to taste it, touch it, use it, feel it. It will go a long way for you. Because as you look at your audience, as you look at your prospect, you have to realize that a bored mind says no. A bored mind says no. Now, on the flip side also, you have to realize that a indifferent mind says no, that a mind that's too comfortable says no. A mind that's too confused says no. Now, it's common sense to realize that you have to keep their attention to persuade them. If you lose them, looking out the window, playing with their phone, not paying attention, they're very, very difficult to persuade. Because you look at attention spans, for example. Attention spans are all-time low. 13 to 18 minutes if you're lucky, if they're really trying, if you're really keeping their attention. Otherwise, it's only a few minutes. So what can you do when you see them kind of veer off, when you see them thinking about something else? Ask a question. Questions keep their attention. They listen. They always answer a question, either mind or out loud. Or use stories. Stories are power. When I look at top persuaders, they're storytellers. When you look at charismatic people, they know how to tell stories. The prospects say, it was like listening to a movie. So if you want to increase your persuasion game, you need to understand what it's like to tell a story, a good story. Because what do stories do? They grab someone's attention. They can be bored out of their mind. It's like, story, and they start listening. It simplifies complex ideas. It makes things easier to understand. And the best thing about stories is they persuade without detection. Let me explain that. If I tell you what to do, if I show you what to do, there's natural resistance. We don't like to be told what to do. But if I tell you in a story, you put yourself in that story and you're listening to that story and you become part of that story, then it persuades you. You're persuading yourself. If I was doing life insurance, I could tell you all day long, you know, that's not enough, that's not enough. Or I could tell you, you got to do it right now, things could happen. Story of somebody that, hey, this happened, they put it off, that's more persuasive than anything else you can say or do. Stories also demonstrate who you are. If you want people to know that you have courage or you're trustworthy, you can't tell them that because they'll have the opposite, because it'll have the opposite effect. Tell them in a story, and that lets them know who you are. And it will always build interest in your presentation and what you're doing. Now, with those stories, remember your goal here is to paint the picture. You want to make sure that when you tell that story, they can see it, hear it, feel it, taste it, whatever it is you're trying to accomplish, that's very, very important here. So you want to practice short, relevant stories that can grab their attention. It captures their senses, and that is what you're looking for. Anytime you can tell a story, a relevant story, it doesn't have to be 10 minutes long, a couple minutes, you illustrate the point, that keeps them involved. So if you lose them at any time, question, story, keep them involved. Remember, bored mind, a confused mind says no. You have to keep them involved with as many senses as possible, or they're not involved, they're not listening, and they're very difficult to persuade. Next piece, I don't know if you've heard this one before, it's called the Zeigarnik Effect. Basically, as we learn about the brain, we've realized that we have a tendency to remember uncompleted thoughts, ideas, or tasks more than completed ones. This is from Bluma Zeigarnik. She's a Russian psychologist. She realized that when she watched waiters and waitresses, that they remembered the orders perfectly until they delivered them, then they were gone. Now, why is this important to you in the law of involvement? Because when things are uncompleted, we remember them more. You're watching the news, you're getting ready to turn off, it's time to eat, and they say, you know what, you're drinking water, it's killing you. Whoa, unfinished and complete, you need to know, a little suspense, a little curiosity. That keeps people involved. Or if you're watching a movie on commercial TV, the knife comes up, suspense, commercial, because you will stick around. So why is that important to you? Wow. When you leave a voicemail or send an email, you want to make sure you get them to return the call, return the email, leave something unfinished. Hey, I found the perfect thing that we were talking about. I felt the solution is right here. Just give me a call. There are three things I need you to do. Keep it unfinished. They have a tendency to remember it more. It doesn't guarantee they're going to return your call, but it's unfinished. They'll remember it more. Hey, see me later. I've got exciting news for you. That type of thing keeps it in their minds. Keep it unfinished. Create the suspense. That's the Zeigarnik Effect. It's powerful in any type of persuasive presentation, leaving voicemail or using email. Another aspect of involvement is a simple thing, you've heard it before, is setting your goals or having somebody else set their goals. This is part of involvement. You see, goals tend to stretch and inspire, and they dictate performance. Now, many people don't like the idea of goal setting. Like, I may make them cringe, but it works. The challenge is most people have never been trained how to do it the right way. And we're going to spend a lot of time with that, but when people set goals, they can visualize themselves doing it. Now, it can have the opposite effect. If you set goals for somebody and they're too high, they can't see themselves do it, they don't know how to do it, it will have the opposite effect. So a production plant wanted to take a look at this. First group they were training was manual labor. They said, try your best. Give us your best. Do your best. Second group, here are your goals. This is what we expect. No secret that the second group with goals accomplished three times more. The rule of thumb is when you set a great goal or when you set a difficult goal, it increases performance as long as they believe they can do it and know how to do it. Because goals do stretch and inspire. And that is a key. Now, the challenge is when you sit down, it has to be part of their goals. They have to buy into it, and it goes a long way. There's another study was done that found there's a large difference between asking someone to do their best and helping them set their goals or having a standard of performance. We have to keep the score. Whether it's in your personal life, when you're working with other people, if they can see themselves doing it, you could set a realistic goal. It does increase performance. There's no doubt about it. Help them set their goals. That keeps them involved. As humans, we need goals. We like goals. We've had bad experiences in the past, but again, you think about the happiest time in your life. You were pursuing a worthwhile, exciting goal, and that's true for other people. It keeps them involved and on track. Another one is having a guarantee. Now, that's interesting. We only use guarantees when somebody is sitting on the fence. Why do we use this? It gets them involved. Watch the infomercials, 60-day, 90-day, money-back guarantee. So someone's sitting on the fence, they're looking at it, they're thinking about it, they're not sure, what if, and all of a sudden, they see an incredible guarantee. They say to themselves, I've got everything to gain and nothing to lose. You get it in their hands, they taste it, touch it, feel they're involved. It's very, very rare that they're going to return it. Now, if it's a faulty product that doesn't work, of course they will, but we're talking about exceeding expectations, getting in their hands, giving them a guarantee, we've got everything to gain and nothing to lose. Now, on one hand, entrepreneurs, they get all tense. Well, what if they do it? What if they take advantage? Hey, they will. There are a few dishonest people out there, but if it doubles and triples what you're doing, you cannot worry about that. I've done that before. CDs and DVDs, I let people know, look, this is going to double your income. I guarantee it. If not, return it, and I'll give you $100 cash just for trying it out. Now, are there people out there that will love it and duplicate it and still return it and get the money? Sure, it's very, very, very rare, but it dramatically increases the amount of people that think, hey, I've got everything to gain, nothing to lose. What type of guarantee can you put into place? So my question to you is, what is your unbeatable no-risk guarantee? What can you say that will cause them to say, you know what, I've got everything to gain and nothing to lose? Get it in their hands, get them to try it, get them to use it, make sure it's believable, make sure it's authentic. It'll make a big difference in keeping them involved in your ability to persuade them. That's why companies offer these guarantees or a warranty. Sitting on the fence, everything to gain, nothing to lose. Remember, you never want to lead with a guarantee. It's only when you've got them, they're thinking about it, they're close, you can have a guarantee. So what I want you to do, what I want you to think about with some homework this week, I want you to think about and find two relevant stories to your product, to your service, and what you do. So when somebody is resisting you, you have a story. Now, you can borrow it from somebody else. Make sure they know that it's borrowed. It's a great story. Maybe it's a story that you've lived or you've experienced, and make sure it's a story that solves their problem. I need to think it through. So every time someone has a question or objection, you're getting resistance, story. That's a tool of power persuaders that automatically triggers something in somebody's brain to where it grabs their attention. And the big news, remember, it persuades without detection. So you think of two stories this week. Use them, practice telling them, and it'll make a big difference in your success and what you're able to do. All right. Now it's time for questions. I've got a few here that we can talk about. If you're on the phone, you can answer those. Remember, whypersuasion.com has the replays, and it also has a place to submit your questions. This one's about the Zeigarnik effect. It says, Kurt, when is the right time to use the Zeigarnik effect? You know, I don't know if there's necessarily a right time. It's usually during a presentation when you want to keep someone's attention. I think the best time to use it is when you're leaving that voicemail. Something, especially if they have a tendency not to call you back. Something unfinished. Hey, you found the report, you found the website, you solved their problem, give me a call. Works very well. Now, the other thing about your question about voicemail is make sure, and we've talked about this, that you listen to their personality when they're leaving a message. If they're, hey, you know the drill, leave a message, you want to keep it short and brief. If they're, you're hearing music, they're like, hey, your message is important to me, probably want to be keep it a little more lively, a little more energetic, and then insert the Zagarnik effect. So in a presentation, I'd use it at the beginning. Hey, I'm going to give you 7 things you can do right now to make an extra $10,000 and kind of feed it throughout your presentation. That arouses curiosity, arouses suspense. That's what we teach with copywriting with a headline. Curiosity, suspense, get them involved. It's unfinished. What's the solution? That's the best time to use that. Another question again is about paint the picture, Kurt. How do I improve painting the picture in my stories? I think the big one's practice. You can record yourself and listen to them. Try to keep it around 2 to 3 minutes, but vivid detail. You didn't go to the beach. No, you stepped on the warm sand, and you could hear the seagulls in the air, and the waves were crashing, and you practiced telling the story. We didn't just take a bite of lemon. Describe the lemon. Describe those feelings that were happening there. You can and that will be able to trigger those emotions in the person. Good question. Next question is, Kurt, how do I know if the goal is too big for my prospect? Well, setting goals with your prospect, it could be for you, it could be for a coworker, but setting realistic goals is important. Realistically, say, is it more than 20% that they've accomplished in the past? Have they achieved it in the past? Is a question to ask yourself. Watch in their eyes when you give it to them. Do they roll? That would be an indicator. But you have to know, especially if it's a coworker, what they're capable of, what they should and should not do. Try to increase it 10, 20%. Make sure they have the tools to be able to do it. They believe they can do it. Make sure the door is open, that they know they can come for help and support anytime. Because nobody wants to feel stupid or look stupid. They might pretend that they know what they're doing, but deep down, they have no idea how they're going to achieve that goal. Any other questions? This one says, Kurt, I know my attention span's low. How do I make it longer? That takes practice. Thinking takes effort. That's a practice thing, to where if you can really get in and focus. As I know with college students, someone opens the door, somebody walks in, something happens, there's a noise, everyone's looking. If you can get a book, for example, and read and concentrate, maybe go to a noisy place. Go where there's a lot of distractions. Go where there's a lot of kids, and you practice, you know, 5 minutes and 6 minutes and drowning out and turning out the noise. It dramatically increases your productivity. It's a huge time management technique, but it does take effort, and you're able to do that. Just be aware that you're not going to let the things distract you. You're going to get in and focus it. Let's see, Kurt, I have a nutritional product. Should I give it away? Yeah, I did mention that. You bet. If you have a drink, for example, and it increases energy and it does this, yeah, I could list those benefits all day long. I say, hey, try it for a week. Try it for a month. You're going to notice this, this, and this. Wow, there's nothing more persuasive than that. Does it cost you a little more? Yeah, maybe in the short run, but in the long run, that's better than chasing somebody for 3 or 4 months. Say, try it for a week, try this for a week, try this post-it note, take the dog home and try it, drive the car for a while, come to this restaurant, try it out. If you can get them in the doors, give them a try, make it as easy as possible, it helps out. Kurt, I have a booth at a swap meet. How can I use the law of involvement? Swap meets are interesting. I love swap meets. The main thing is, when you can approach somebody and talk to them, it increases the chances they're going to buy. The longer you can get them to stay in your booth or your spot, the more they're going to buy. There's a direct correlation between time spent in the store and how much people buy. But I think the bigger one is, it's always kind of, I don't know if the word's eerie for people to go into a booth when there's nobody there. If you could have family members or friends just kind of look around, shop around, a couple people in there, so they're not the first one or only one in there, it's actually easier for people to go in there, and it's easier to keep them involved when there's multiple people. That's kind of a social validation thing, but also enhances involvement. Any other questions? All right, remember your homework. I want you to do the stories. Think them through. Borrow them if you need to. That point where you're getting the objection or the question will be very, very helpful. And send me your questions via whypersuasion.com. We'll have them post the replay within the next 24 hours. And we'll continue on with some of the other laws of persuasion next week. So with that, everyone, have an incredible week. And we'll talk to you soon. Good night, everyone.